So I'm Alora Udell, and the summit that we are filming right now, Write Your Story, Heal Your Life, is an incredible summit. And I say that because I've been interviewing some really amazing people. And yesterday I had the opportunity to talk to Joanne Fedler, who is in the summit today. We're going to talk to you for an hour, and I'm really happy that we connected. I feel like I'm already known you and feel like that sisterhood connection. So I was inspired looking at your website, your journey of becoming a writer. But when I say that, becoming a writer, I'm sure you've always been a writer, but that sort of when we step into our own and we own it and we say, I'm a writer. So I'd like to ask you that question. When did you realize that you were a writer?
Well, I think, Laura, I realized I was a writer when I was really little, actually, because I've been writing stories since I was about 6 years old. I've still got all the stories that I wrote as a child. I grew up with a father who's a political cartoonist in South Africa. And so we were always storytelling. We were always working with ideas in a way that was creative. He would tell us stories and he would draw pictures for us. We would color them in as children. My sisters and I used to have these games. We would tell each other stories and then draw the pictures for them. So I feel like I've always belonged to writing, and that writing was always there. It was like I got words early. My older sister was born hard of hearing, and my parents didn't know that for the first couple of years. And it took ages to actually diagnose whether a child couldn't hear, but they were told that she was brain damaged. And then I came along at around 9 months, apparently I started talking, and I was the only one who could understand her, and I used to interpret what she was saying to them. So I feel like words came to me. I was made to use words, and especially in this way with my sister, I was made to understand that some people don't have a voice, and that those of us who do have a voice have a responsibility to use it on behalf of others. And I feel like I've kind of always been the one who's always stood up, spoken out in class whenever there was a difficult question that we had to ask an extension, or when are we getting our marks back, everyone would go, Joanne, you ask the teacher. So I know how to use my voice, and I've always used writing as a way of understanding what's going on for me. I don't know that ever was something I didn't know. It's almost like I always used to talk into the darkness, and people are, you know, I have this relationship with some kind of spirit in the world, and I don't know where that began, but I just always used to speak into the darkness, thinking, knowing that there was something there that was alive to me. And in the same way, I feel like writing was always there. It was never something I feel like I met. It wasn't like a moment of meeting and going, oh, this is writing. But I do remember when I was 14, my father giving me a copy of Dylan Thomas's book Under Milk Wood, Play for Voices, and saying, I think you should read this. And I read it, and I remember the sensation of reading that language out loud, and the almost like this tickle inside of me of what you could do with language. And I thought, I want to be able to do that with words. So I think that was when I awoke to language, and I started writing. You know, I was always writing, but the first time I had a book published was when I was in my 30s. It was in 2005. That was when my first book was published, but I knew long before then that I was a writer.
It's often, I find people who are creative, they're an artist, you know, they're working as artists for a living, that their parents or grandparents, and they've come from a family of artists where their art, the children's art has been supported. So you mentioned that your father was a political cartoonist. So from that, I automatically jumped to that your creativity was encouraged and supportive. And I would like to know, and I'm sure our viewers would like to know, actually would like to know more about your father and your family. I actually took a workshop in cartooning a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, I can't draw. I'm not into cartoons, but I'm really interested in it. And it was a great workshop because I think there's so much about, especially if you're a writer, you know, sort of going that left brain, right brain, but getting out of the words into just the plain visuals on the page.
Mm. Well, growing up with a father who had a job that no other parent had was very exciting. And, you know, there was an element, of course, of joy in, you know, watching him. What he called work was holding a pen and literally drawing on the page. And I just used to love standing and watching him. He was literally picked up a pencil when he was four and he could draw. So, you know, there really is something about people who are born with it. But he, like me, believes that anyone can draw, and he teaches people to draw using the letters of the alphabet. So it's incredible. And I feel like what I've gone on to do with my life is I've gone on to do the same thing, which is to say anybody can write. If you can talk, you can write. You know, if you can write words on a page, you are a writer. My father as well, by the way, is an amazing writer. He's just at the age of 75 published his memoir, which he's been working on for 15 years and which I've been encouraging him to write. And he's now working on his second book. So I think there's a real, you know, creativity has all these different forms of expression. And if your instinct, which I think creativity is from nothing to make something, to invite a world, to imagine something that isn't already there, that is basically our human life force. We are born with that instinct to create something. We do it in relationships with people. They're two strangers, suddenly two people to come together, you create a relationship. You do it in your work. You can do it in whatever you touch, you can create something. So this idea that people, when people say to me, I'm not creative, it sounds to me like people are saying I'm dead, because as long as you are breathing, you are creative. You are an expression of life force, and you have the power to create anything. And people who are beautiful cooks and can take ingredients and create something that was not there before, it has so many forms of expression. My mother, by the way, is also a wonderful cook and probably doesn't think that she herself is creative. She's a doctor. She was encouraged to become a doctor. Her father was a doctor. But she is a beautiful, amazing drawer. I look at all the things she drew as a little girl. She used to create these dolls, these paper dolls, and all these beautiful outfits. She could have been a fashion designer, and she's an amazing artist, but I know that she would never, ever use that word to describe herself. My sister, who's a doctor as well, the one who's deaf, is an incredible potter and makes the most beautiful ceramics. So I think, you know, certainly creativity was valued in my home, but I was encouraged to become a lawyer, which is what I did, and really only fell back into my writing when I immigrated from South Africa to Australia, and I didn't want to requalify and become a lawyer. I'd done enough working in the anti-violence against women movement, and I was ready for something new. But I did feel like it was self-indulgent at the time, and I did feel like it wasn't really contributing to society for me to be writing. And so it took a little bit of work to get over that, but I am now so fully in the corner of creativity, and I think there is nothing more valuable, more life-affirming, and the medicine that the world needs right now.
Absolutely. Now, that reminds me, thank you for sharing that. Just, you know, the journey and talking about your family. And I think ancestry is so important. And also, you know, my curiosity, I still haven't been to South Africa. I have, you know, good friends and I really want to go. And also, you know, a long history, an interesting history, and a very difficult history, you know, of the country. And, you know, all of those things can be explored in the micro and the macro. So explored, like, how do you explore the history of a country and of a people, and then explore, you know, the history of one person, you know, one individual. Mm-hmm. And usually, as you're exploring that history, it's never about one person. You know, you're incorporating all of it. And it's just so inspiring. Oh, who was it? That's what I was going to say. Somebody made that quote of, I'm not sure if it was Gandhi or if it was later than that, but saying we really don't need any more lawyers in the world. We don't need any more lawyers, no more doctors, no more attorneys. Well, maybe they said that we need, but that we need artists.
That's right.
You know, and the healing that we can actually have from art. I mean, now it's so integrated into integrated medicine, you know, that there's art therapy, you know.
And narrative therapy, absolutely.
Yes. So it is there. It's not just like, oh, we're artists saying that it's healing. And on that note, I'd like to ask you this question of how do you feel in your own personal journey about the process of writing, especially in memoir writing, how it can heal and transform?
Well, I think just based on what you've said, I think that there is narcissistic art. I do have to say that. I do think that there is some creativity that is incredibly self-indulgent and narcissistic, where an artist is not engaged or connected to the world, where it is literally all just about me. And we all know that there are artists who are incredibly self-obsessed. And I think that that is a stage of spiritual development where we all go through that kind of, you know, Jungian stage of being, you know, the athlete and the warrior, and it's all about us and what we can do and everything. But I believe that there is a certain point at which all of us move into an understanding that whatever I'm about, whoever I am, I have to find a way in which that is connected to the bigger picture. Because otherwise, what is it all about? And so what I teach people to do is to take the personal. And the more personal, the better. The absolute minutiae of your personal experience. And to find a way to what I call create a bridge between your personal experience and the universal experience. And that to me is the true purpose of writing and making meaning. Because when I teach writing, and when I've written my own memoir, I teach it I have a certain recipe, a formula for helping people find their voice. And it starts with you and your body and your felt lived experience, because you can't start with an idea or something that's abstract or something that is not of you. So this whole idea in spirituality that, you know, you should become nothing and the ego should dissolve and all of that. Yes, eventually. But we are embodied creatures, so you have to start in the body. So I always start teaching writing in the body. Then we move from the body and the senses into emotion. And again, you know, emotion is something that we regard as kind of an inferior spiritual state, because emotion just passes through us. We shouldn't be attached. Yes, eventually. But we have to cross the ocean of emotion in order to come to a place where that emotion, which has now raised memory, which is part of identity and all of that. So I take people through senses, emotions, memory. If we stayed in that world where it's just about our bodies, our emotions and our memories, that's when it becomes narcissistic and self-indulgent. Then it's just about me. That's not the full purpose of our writing. The full purpose of our writing is to step out of ourselves at that point and make meaning out of that experience. And the minute we make meaning out of the experience, we are creating themes, we are creating transitions, we're creating bridges for other people to enter from their felt lived experience and enter into our experience and go, ah, that's what your experience meant for you. Thank you. That lights my journey too. If your art is not doing that for other people, it is self-indulgent, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think we have to sometimes stop that, especially if we've been told that being self-indulgent or valuing your own experience is a bad thing, which a lot of us who have done a lot of spiritual work have been taught to do, is to devalue our deeply felt personal experience. We have to transcend it. The only way to transcend it is to really own it. And really be in it, and not to make it not of you. It has to be completely of you. So to answer your question, Alora, in my memoir writing, what I have done is I have gone deeply into my own experience. At the times I really worried that who's going to be interested in this, but I was incredibly conscious of the fact that I needed to create bridges for readers and transitions that took it out of being just about me and making it about everybody else. Because when you're writing, the most important thing to remember is you're writing from your experience, but you are writing for other people. If you forget you are writing for other people, you won't make that transition. And that's where a lot of mistakes I see, aspiring authors make, is they forget that they're writing for other people. This is not about you. It's from you, but it is for others.
Yes. I agree. When I'm working with my coaching clients, well, what I actually say, the beginning of, when I work with someone is, write, the most important thing at this point is to write. Don't necessarily think where the project's going to go at this stage at the very beginning. So write that story authentically. However, so I actually don't say write your story or this story thinking of the audience, that you have to write a specific way for an audience. However, just to get them writing. And then I'm very much about, now think about what the reader wants to read. Does the reader want to read, "When I was six, we moved from London to Barnsley into a brick house"? Or do you say, "When I was in primary school, I was ripped away from my family of origin. The journey up the motorway, all I remember was it was grey. I mean, just for an example, will you engage your reader if you're saying, these are the facts? And it's okay to write those facts. But maybe, as you're saying, it's like, what is narcissist? You really have to talk to someone who really wants to finish their manuscript as, what does the reader want to read? And there's so much writing out there that you really do have to engage your reader.
Oh, it's one of the first things that I get people to think about, because if you don't want to think about it like that, I always make people ask the question, what vision of life is this manuscript in service to? Because that question takes it out a little bit. It's not just, I just need to get my story down. It's like, well, what vision of life does this manuscript support? What is the teaching of this story? Where is that teaching that must be gently tucked into your story, not, didactically spelled out, but what offering? There's got to be something in it for the reader, and that is generally what the vision that you're holding up through your writing. And a lot of people struggle to get there, but eventually we all make it across that bridge. We just need a little bit of support and guidance. And I do think writing the facts and the details of your life is completely fine, as long as you eventually are going to make meaning out of those facts and help us understand how that might relate to my experience.
Absolutely.
So in my memoir, which was called When Hungry Eat, which was about, going to a dietitian at the age of 40, being told I was obese, and then immigrating from South Africa to Australia, I was convinced while I was writing that book that no one was going to be interested in my weight issues, nor in my terrible, terrible homesickness and my feeling that I had completely done the wrong thing by leaving my beloved homeland and moving to a new country. And I was very conscious of that the whole time. And I think it's a good thing that when we're writing that we are vigilant to the fact that who's going to care? Who's going to care about that? Because your job as a writer, especially in memoir, is to make the reader care. So you have got to employ all the storytelling techniques that are used in fiction and in all forms of writing in order to make that story of yours come alive. If you want other people to read it, you must make sure that there's something in it for them. And that's the basis of my new Hay House book called Your Story, How to Write It So Others Will Want to Read It. Because I think that when most people say, "I just want to write my story," they don't really mean that. What they mean is, "I want to write my story and I want other people to read it." And I recognize that early on with mentoring is that that essentially is what people need to be taught. They really want to understand. And I always, and so for me, what I always tell people is you have to then learn the craft of writing. It's, I think anyone can write, and I think anyone can write to heal, and you can certainly do a lot of expressive writing, the work of James Pennebaker, Professor James Pennebaker, which is all about, you know, doing that kind of expressive writing is wonderful. Journaling is wonderful. All of that is very healing. But if you want to write something and you want others to read it, there is a craft that must be learned. You cannot short circuit learning the craft. And it's a great discipline to take your life, this big, messy, chaotic expanse of your whole life, and work out how do I shape this and structure this so that there is intrigue and there is storytelling and there is character development and there is plot and all of these things that really do illuminate story and make story come alive. How do I do that for a reader writing memoir? And so that's kind of the basis of what I teach people to do, because a lot of people who come to me are already trying to write from their life stories.
That you touched on many, many important factors there, because I'll just share with you, on Sunday night, I put up a Facebook page for my company, Write Your Story. Well, actually, it's Write Your Unique Story. And it just went out, and it reached, I did pay for like an initial, like boosting the page. And it reached over 15,000 people. And all these people commented on the page and say, oh, I have a story to tell. And the next person, I have this story. It's unbelievable. And I have this story. And the truth is, everyone has a story, you know, everyone has a life story. And some of the most atrocious things may have happened to you. Some of the most amazing things may have happened, or both of them. But the question is, when, you know, push comes to shove, are you able to write that story in a creative way that's going to engage your readers? And one of the things you were saying was, you know, even that point of characterization, you know, are we just going to say, well, my mother left me when I was three, you know, full stop? Or are we going to go into, you know, the memories that I have of my mom, and this is how she looked, or the memories of what my aunt told me, and sort of really shaping that. So again, it's like, you know, I think it's like when you see amazing paintings, or you might see, so for an example, a surrealist painting, and someone might come along, you know, of like one of Picasso's very lined basic drawings and say, oh, I could have done that. You know, that's easy. But could they, you know, Picasso was actually a classically trained painter. Mm. You know, it didn't actually just jump off the page that way. It was many years. It was this evolution, and just like writing and being an artist is this evolutionary journey.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think is so useful for people when I'm teaching them is to write about yourself as if you were a character, and to write about people in your life as if they were characters, because that's how you have to come to the writing. And what I find when people do that, Alora, is because of the way I teach character, which is to come with a compassionate eye, especially when you are writing about people in your life that you've had a really difficult relationship with. I always say, look for the paradox, look for the complexity in every character, because a character has to be sympathetic one way or the other. Even your evil characters have got to have some redeeming qualities. And when you start to talk about writing about, you know, the baddies in your story, who are the baddies in your life, you know, the ex who left you and had an affair, and your father who was an alcoholic, or, you know, even worse. I mean, I've had writers who've come with much worse stories than that. But when I get them to now write about that person as a complex character, and you should do character interviews the same way as you were doing fiction, what has happened, and this is always what I love, is that your feeling about that person changes. because you're being asked now to come and look at them with a compassionate eye, not only to describe them compassionately, but to look at their fears, their longings. Every character has got a set of fears and longings and unmet desires. And so I always get my writers to think about their characters, you know, who are these evil players in their life in these ways. And I want to tell you that the transformational stories that have come out of my writing retreats and out of writing workshops that I've done with people, where I've gotten people to examine, you know, these characters in their lives, the kind of little crack of forgiveness, this little ability to be with the imperfection of what you were given. A mother who you said never loved you, but when you looked at her, you saw her history, you saw how damaged she was, you recognized that she was doing her best. It's just incredible how healing that is when you come to the writing and you think you're just writing a character sketch, because writing about character is always about opening your heart to that person and really trying to see them, not stereotyping them, because that's another thing that we do, is we stereotype and we turn people into cliches and we flatten them, as opposed to really taking that compassionate gaze, which is not judgmental, and that you know, that can encompass the fact that that person is suffering as well as, you know, having damaged you, hurt you, done you wrong. And I think one of the main thing that comes out of writing memoir, writing, as you say, and writing your story, is that you stop becoming a victim. Because when you take ownership of your story and you're writing, I did this, I did that, I saw this, I saw that, this is what happened to me. Even if terrible things were done to you, owning your story and owning where you were in that story, even if it was just surviving in silence, you know, holding onto your brave heart, whatever it was, I have just seen people stop blaming other people for what's going on in their lives, stop being victims in their lives, and really saying, yeah, this is the shit that happened in my life, but guess what? You know, I'm here to tell this story. So, you know, I just love those moments, you know, where people step into their stories and they're no longer the victim of that story. It is their story to tell. And it's that agency. It's moving from that passive into that active voice. This is my story. Even if, you know, that story is a shocking story of suffering.
Yes, it's really, I can speak to that in terms of my own writing and my own experience of just writing that story, how healing it's been, but with the women that I work with. And I very much agree of coming from, you know, if you felt the victim of all these things that have happened. And in our conversation yesterday, when we were checking in about doing this interview today, you know, we were both talking about some of the stories that we've heard that women have written and shared, and men too. I primarily work with women, but just stories that, you know, others could find shocking. And you and I both shared how, you know, we're good at holding space, that we're not sort of in the what did happen, you know, like did that happen, or sort of in the shock, but just being very much able to hold that space and the seeing that transformation for people if they did feel victimized, and definitely people have some very good reasons to feel victimized, but how you can come out of that and feel stronger, feel empowered. And I think a big part of that that I observe is really taking away the shame. I think in psychotherapy they say, you know, that shame is really one of the hardest emotions, feelings to live with. Yeah. So how do we, and I think especially with people who have been sexually abused, and especially sexually abused as children, you know, it's the perpetrator is actually consciously made the children to be in shame, like don't tell anyone, this is a secret, you know, if someone finds out, you know, you're already going to get in trouble. So, you know, how to move through that, and I, and you know, some writers.
Yeah, I've certainly had a lot of experience with writers who have had exactly that kind of history and who in the writing have really come to a place of absolute forgiveness, not only of the perpetrator, but, you know, of this terrible, you know, shame and forgiveness to themselves, which somehow they feel, you know, that they were somehow to blame for that. So, you know, for me, this whole writing journey that we can take people on into their darkest places. I always say you need a lantern, a shovel, and a big brave heart. But if you go in there and, you know, you've got somebody there to hold the space for you, there is nothing that can come up from those terrible places that you cannot meet and you cannot integrate and you cannot become whole from. You know, that is really, I think, part of our job here on this planet, in this life, is really to become whole human beings. And so going back down into those shadows and really raking up that terrible pain, the thing we think will absolutely break us. It's just such a wonderful homecoming when you completely integrate all that stuff that you thought you just never wanted to know about again, but somehow you're able to bring it back into the territory or the kingdom of your own heart and just know that you are full and whole and cracked and broken and alive because of being able to hold all of those broken shards together. There's such a beautiful concept in Japanese art called kintsugi, which is the art of taking a broken vessel and fixing it with gold resin. So that the breaks become the most beautiful part of the object. And I often feel like writing is a kind of, you know, the word smithery version of kintsugi, which is just taking this broken vessel of the self and putting it together and where the scars are, this gold, shiny, illuminated self that is vulnerable, imperfect, and whole because of those breaks.
That's such a beautiful visual, you know, metaphor to use.
I love it.
Beautiful, you know, to that. So many of us have had the, you know, those broken lives, you know, really. And I loved what you said about the homecoming. You know, and really, for me, just seeing that sort of coming back to home, but coming back to self.
Yeah, it is a homecoming when you actually meet the parts of yourself you've disowned, that you have, you know, they're the orphans of your consciousness and you have completely banished them from having anything to do with your life. But when you basically extend an invitation to them, you're welcome, come, you know, return, it is a homecoming because they're of you, they're of yourself, and they're of worthy of love and compassion just as much as all the parts of yourself that you think are so fabulous. In fact, more worthy of that love and compassion, you know, to really integrate those parts of yourself that have been starved of love and attention and gentleness, and even from you, you know, from ourselves. When we banish those parts of ourselves, we have, you know, added suffering on top of the suffering, which is something that we can, you know, become much more gentle about, you know, not to make, we all suffer. And the whole point is not to add suffering on top of that suffering by shaming ourselves further, or by, you know, adding pain to what is already painful.
Yes, it's so true. I read something recently about the way that we beat ourselves up, especially as women, you know, sort of, and especially I think for women as they age, but even we know that it's happening to younger women, you know, teenage women, sort of, you know, the way they feel that they have to look, and, mm-hmm. you know, sort of how we're just even taking eating disorders like, you know, bulimia and anorexia, and that, you know, we know of people who have been in the spotlight, who are famous, who have died, you know, like Karen Carpenter, the singer. And this piece of writing said, you know, if you went up to someone or a friend and just said to your best friend, hey, do you know you look really ugly? And do you know that, you know, you've got a fat bum or whatever, or, you know, you've got a zit there, you know, it's like you wouldn't speak to your best friend like that, but somehow you give permission to speak to yourself.
See, that's exactly right. And that's why I think, Laura, you know, so much of this writing journey is just about self-compassion. When we write into our stories and we start to look at the ways in which we have been hurt, the ways in which we have been starved, the ways in which we have not had the full love that maybe we needed at a particular time, we can learn to remother those parts of ourselves in the writing and stop being so harsh on ourselves. And such a large part of the mentoring that I do is about helping people to just drop the judgments of themselves. And my husband is hilarious. Whenever I get into a little space, especially around, you know, the way I mother my children, my teenage children, something goes wrong with them and I say, oh, you know, this is all my fault. It's all my fault. And he goes, don't beat yourself up just because it's your fault. So I always love that when, you know, when he reminds me that, you know, things are going to happen and you don't need to beat yourself up about them, even if you think it's your fault. Let that go.
Let it go. And also, if you're a writer, if you're an artist of any kind, but if you're a writer, one thing that you can do is that you can write about it. You know, you can write about the stupidest thing that happened, you know, or the most, you know, just the traumatic thing, but also the light things. It's like we can turn, everything is a story and we can turn it into a story. And even if it's just like, okay, this is just a writing exercise, I'm just going to write about, you know, that. Let me just think about something that I remember from when I was a teenager. Oh, me and my friends were in an art class and we got this opportunity to go to Camberwell Art College on a Saturday. You know, we're just like these silly teenage girls. Well, you know, silly teenage girls in terms of we're being silly with each other. And I remember we were on the bus, you know, the double-decker buses in London. And this elderly man, well, you know, he probably really wasn't that old, but we were teenagers, and he got up to get off at the next bus stop, but the bus was going around the roundabout, and as it swagged around the roundabout, he was swagging, and he like fell on one of us. And then he fell on this like lady with all her shopping bags, and she was just like, just like all this stuff. And we, you know, instead of being like compassionate, because we were, you know, not yet quite adults, sort of, are you okay? We just like burst into these like bits of giggles and we couldn't stop. So it's like all these little stories that become the big stories in our lives. And what do we actually want to, you know, reflect on when we're writing? And I think that comes back to, you know, really what do you think the reader is going to want to read, you know? And we can choose, you know, whether we're going to write a comedic chick flick or just something that's, you know, more serious on that really engaging level. And that's another thing that I say with working with my coaching clients of, what do you know, you have this really interesting story. And people, even though those dark places, it's actually going to engage the reader. Every time you write about what it was like selling meth on the streets when you were a teenager, that was hard. But people actually will read it, and it's important that they read it, because this is your gift to the world. And I really believe that pretty much all artists and writers, when we're being really conscious about what we do, we are giving that gift to the world.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that I work a lot with writers about is working with this mindset of self-doubt, which I think is important. I think it's an important censoring mechanism, as I was saying earlier, to just get us out of this narcissistic loop. We don't want to stay in a narcissistic loop. And I think it is true that not everything that happened to us is of interest to the reader. And it's important for us to keep in mind. But that when you really do work hard to make meaning of your experience and you offer it to the world, and I use the term when I teach that an experience needs to have traveled through you. And that what that means is it has to have traveled through your body, through your heart, through your through your consciousness before it comes out onto the page. So we shouldn't be sharing our undigested journaling and the first thing that we blurt out onto the page. There's a process that it has to have traveled. And when you've done that, and you can then offer that to the reader where you have made the transition between the personal and the universal, there is no question that that will connect with the reader. If you are connected to your story, and you have made sure to be connected to a reader, your story will connect with a reader. But that does take work. And what frustrates me, Alora, are all these writing courses out there that tell people write a bestseller in 30 days. I've seen one that says write it in a weekend. These are not the kinds of offerings, for example, that I would be interested in reading, something that somebody wrote over 48 hours. That's just my personal take on it. If I'm going to devote hours of my life to it, I want to know that story has been hard won, that somebody's worked hard for that story before they've offered it to the world. I don't believe in shortcuts, and I don't believe that there is a quick way of doing this, because we're also working with elements of consciousness here as well as craft. It's not just learning how to write. It's also learning how to be connected. And there are so many ways in which we have to work to be connected and stay connected in the writing, because, you know, we have the tendency to be connected and then switch off and then be connected and switch off. And we have to be able to self-regulate. We have to be able to be in control of our story. We have to make very artistic, not narcissistic, structural and narrative decisions. I mean, all of these things come into play here. So this is what I'm interested in teaching people, and I have a writing course called The Author Awakening Adventure, because I believe that writing is a process of awakening. There's an awakening that happens to us, and if we are awake when we write, we have the potential to wake other people up through our writing. It's not just about the craft. It is also about consciousness and working with what's going on in inside of you, because I believe that everything that is showing up in your writing, whatever is showing up in your writing, is showing up in your life in some way. And if you cannot make that connection between the writing and what's going on in your life, there's work still to be done there. And actually, that for me is the most exciting thing, is to work with people in that space of, we look at what's coming up in the writing and we go, how does the fact that I can only write in the passive voice, how is that showing up in my life? Or my writer's block, or the fact that I can't finish a piece. What does that mean, you know? So that's really the place where I work, is in this little interface between craft and consciousness.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about, which I feel that in the conversation I've really picked up on why. I mean, I know myself personally, I have a writing coach. Why I believe in coaches. I spoke to someone recently who said, I have a coach for everything in my life, you know, sort of my money coach, my, you know, fit coach.
I like coaches too.
Yeah. And, you know, it's because, you know, we don't have to be experts in everything that we do. You know, if someone knows something that they can gift us and it can be reciprocal. But I wanted to ask you, and again, I feel that this question has been answered by the conversation, but why you feel that it is important for someone who is serious about their writing to have a writing coach?
Well, it's a bit like when you're in a relationship and things are going wrong and you can't work out what's going on because you're both in it. You sometimes need somebody that is just outside of it that can be what I call the third eye. And as a coach, what I do is, you're in such an intimate relationship with your writing. It's like you're locked into an intimate relationship. You can't see what's working and what's not working. What I can do as a coach is I will help you reflect. I will guide someone. I never dictate what a person should do. But a writing coach is really somebody that will hold that space for you while you work out what is going on for yourself, and draw attention to the kinds of things I do, where you are writing in cliche, where you're not going deep enough, where you are skimming the surface, where you are writing in platitudes, where you don't have a voice yet. I can be your reader. I can be like the potential reader and go, you know what? And I've said this to writers often. I read this. I know that this is an important moment in your life. I felt nothing. And you're going to have to go back there and make sure that I feel something, because if I don't feel something, and I'll say to them, did you feel anything when you wrote that? You know, were you just going through some kind of emotions? And I know that if I don't feel anything, that they have not felt anything. And so a lot, sometimes people say to me, but if I write about that, do I have to feel it again? And I'm like, yeah, that's what you have to do. You have to feel it again in order to write about it. It's not, you don't get a little shortcut. You know, I don't have to feel it if I just write about it. You know, there is a beautiful quote, I think it is by Hemingway, says, or it might have been by Vonnegut. I'm sorry, I'm so bad with remembering who said these things, but he says, no tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. And so for me, you know, being a writing mentor is making sure that there are tears in the writer so that there will be tears or laughter or whatever the emotion is that you want to evoke in your reader.
Oh, that really just popped something for me. Really did. You know, it's just how it is hard, I think. It can be a real challenge to go back, you know, back through memory, back through experience, writing about the really hard things. Yeah. And I know that I've really avoided writing some of the difficult things. And yet when I get to that place and I write about them, there is that moving through it. And I've had to have a coach to really coach me with, you know, Alora, you know, like, this is the piece that, you know, you're meant to write. Wow. And that your readers will want to hear. And even in agreement, I just see where sometimes it's so hard to go to those dark places. And I think that that's okay. We can give ourselves permission to take a break from the writing. And also when you have a coach, your coach is going to gently bring you back, or more fiercely bring you back to what, you know, what your gift is, what your job is, you know.
A lot of people get scared, and that's happened a lot with me with writers. They try to break up with me, and I always tell them, I'm very hard to break up with. You can try, but I'm very hard to break up with. I'm not just going to let you say, this is too hard, or whatever excuse. I don't have time, you know. And I've heard every excuse that there is about why I actually can't do this. And I am just like, no, I'm sorry. If you want to break up with me, these are the things you're going to have to do to make sure that that's the case. And I've had people come back more committed, more engaged. It's just that fear of thinking I've got to do this on my own. And I think having a writing mentor is somebody who's tied with a, you know, you're like scaling down this glacier, but somebody's got you on a rope, and you know that there is that person holding you. And that's what I feel that I can sometimes do, is that I'm with you. I'm not going to let you fall. I'm not going to let you plummet to your emotional death here. No, we're holding on this thing together. You just keep letting me know that you're okay. You're still breathing. You're still down there. And then when I think you've had enough, I'll pull you up a little bit and then we'll go back down. We're not finished down there. So it just is that feeling of knowing that you are connected to someone, that you're safe with someone. Someone is not judging you. I mean, that is such an important thing about a writing mentor, is for you to know that that person is not sitting in judgment of you, and that whatever comes up is completely okay and welcome. So that is my job as a mentor, is to really make my writers feel that there is nothing that is taboo. Nothing that comes up is not welcome.
And that creates safety.
Safety. And you cannot find your writing voice unless you feel safe.
Yeah.
And the reason we maybe don't feel safe is because maybe in our lives we've never felt safe. We've never had a circumstance in which we've actually felt safe. Some of us were born into environments where we were not safe emotionally or even physically. And so we have no experience of feeling safe. So that's why it's so scary. It is a completely new experience for many people to actually feel safe and to trust another person that they're not going to abandon them, shame them, you know, get tired of them, think you're too intense or whatever it is, whatever narratives you've inherited from your childhood or from whatever, you know, your life experience you've had, but to know that I am actually safe. So for me, often a lot of the time is about proving to somebody I'm mentoring that they can trust me. Because that's how it works. That's how you, how writing works. You have to trust somebody else, especially if you don't trust yourself. A lot of people don't trust themselves. So they have to start by trusting me. And so I've got to be a trustworthy person. So I'm trustworthy, and however long that takes, I will hold that space and be trustworthy. And then there's a certain point at which they start to trust the process because they see the writing is actually working. And once they start to trust the process, then this beautiful, incredible transition happens where people begin to trust themselves. And that for me is the delivery. That's when I can sign off and say, okay, my job here is done.
Yeah. And that's such, well, I feel that I felt really honored when I work with writers that people have trusted me. And it's really, I really feel that as coaches, as mentors, that we are as invested as the writer themselves in their writing and their projects, really invested. You know, it's really, it's almost like, you know, they're having a baby and we're having a baby at the same time, because it really is that part of that. And on that note, we have a few more minutes, and I'd really like to ask you more about your current projects and books. I know you've got a great class that you're releasing right now, and I think you released, and you have this trip to Fiji that a writing retreat, but that's all booked up, because that sounds so, I was like, I want to go on that. And then it's like, oh, it's booked up. But I'm like, oh.
It's just over for this year, but we have writing retreats coming up as well. Yeah. Now I'll tell you all about that, Alora. Just to say, some of the things that I do, and this investment that I have in my writers, it's actually become such a big thing that I have realized that I actually can't work on my own writing while I'm mentoring others. It's just because at the moment I've got, well, there are 8 writers that I mentor very closely, but I have a group of 18 who are in my Author Liftoff program. And these are all alumni of my writing retreats over the years. And I've created a 3 series of workshops to basically move them into publication. So we've done one on the rewriting process. We've got one in June coming up, which is the business of being an author, which is helping them to understand how to build a platform and a profile, and understand the difference between self-publishing and publishing, the legalities, social media, all of that. And in October, I've actually managed, because I've got really good relationships with publishers, I've got a publisher who has agreed to read the first chapter of all of their books, and I'm introducing them to publishers and agents. So I am completely and utterly invested in my writers. When people come and work with me, it's like, I just want to see them published. I just want to see them. I get their work out into the world, and there is nothing that I won't do to make sure that that happens. So so how that works is, if people want to work with me, they come on a writing retreat. I only mentor people who've been on writing retreats with me, because I feel like I can download everything I know on a writing retreat and share everything I know with people, so that we're not talking about basic writing concepts when we're mentoring. Then there is the mentoring that I do, and then there are these author liftoff programs. But I've also launched a 7-day free online writing challenge, which is just finished. And I have created this new online writing course called the Author Awakening Adventure, which deals with basically how it started was I recognized there were 6 problems that aspiring authors face, and I've identified what they are, because they've come up time and time and time again. And then I identify the strength that counters those problems, and they're all elements of consciousness. The one is courage. The one is curiosity. There are 6 of them. They're all start with a C. And then I've basically created a course that works with these 6 elements of consciousness and teaches you the craft of writing, and at the same time works those elements of consciousness. And that course is kicking off on the 26th of June this year. So I'm very, very excited. I've already got quite a lot of people that have signed up for that. But it includes meditations, which integrate the training. There's a consciousness training and a craft training. And culminate my life's work. It feels like the integration of like 30 years of spirituality, personal development, writing, publishing, that all has come together in this quite creative and unique way. And so I'm very, very excited about its launch in a couple of weeks' time.
That's so exciting. It is so exciting. It's really exciting. And such a great resource too, and really wonderful to offer that to the viewers, that they can jump over to your website, and we'll have a link to your website to find out more about it. And because you really offer some really amazing things, and you don't have to be in Australia, you know, you don't have to be in Sydney.
No, not at all. That was one of the reasons I created this online course. I used to think I had to have people in a room because I'm good at holding space and I love intimacy and I really feel connected to each person. So I was quite limiting myself by thinking that I could only work with that, because I only take a small group every year. I don't take big numbers. I don't do the whole Tony Robbins, you know, 700 people in a room thing. I really love to be able to look each person in the eye and know the intimacies of their story. But I've been, I recognize not a lot of people could travel to Fiji. Some people couldn't afford the writing retreat. So I've created an offering which I know is completely transformational. It's still an investment, and it has to be an investment. I'm looking for people who are ready and willing to invest in themselves, people who are taking writing seriously. But it's a way in which I can still connect with people virtually. We will have virtual trainings like this. I'll, you know, people will be able to ask me questions and interact with me. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, I still do love to hug people. I still do love the physical contact. But I do all my mentoring virtually because I have people all over the world that I mentor. And I still like just sitting like this. I feel like you're in the room. And even though I can't hug you, I still energetically feel connected to you. So I am pushing myself into the online world.
And that's great, because if we have this technology, then we need to use it in positive ways, you know.
Absolutely. And it's enabled me to, you know, to also share this with people all around the world who, you know, I can offer scholarships. I've offered scholarships to people in the third world who are desperately want to learn to write. It's really just allowed me to have something that I can share and give and allow people to participate wherever they're at. So it does allow me to have a more of an impact. And so I'm very grateful for that.
And on that note, with gifting and sharing, I believe that you do have a gift for our viewers.
Yes, I do. I do have a special gift for your viewers, which they will be able to, I reckon, download from the website. So I actually have created a little pack of writing prompt cards. They're my wings cards like this. And I have an online version of them, which I will be gifting to any of your readers who would like them. And these are just little daily writing prompts. You know, when you're feeling stuck, it's so nice to be able to just, you won't be able to pull one out, but what you would be able to do is just pull up a little, well, you won't see the back. You probably only have the fronts of them. But how far are you prepared to go? What are you prepared to give? What do you still need to learn? And sometimes these, I sometimes call them little soul prompts, but they're wonderful writing prompts as well. And so I'm going to be gifting those to any of your readers who would like to have those as part of their little writing journey.
That's lovely. And prompts, I'm a big proponent of prompts. That's wonderful. But I really appreciate your time. It's been really inspiring. And I'm just so happy that we connected. And just really, I'm just feel very grateful that we've connected. And I know that we will stay in touch.
Absolutely.
And I'd love to interview you again, but I really want to stay in touch as friends.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All the best for the summit, and blessings to all your readers. I wish them a wonderful writing journey, a healing writing journey.
Thank you so much. You have a wonderful day, and good luck with all your projects. And I know.
Thank you.